is Bob Tomlinson, the Deputy Forest Director, and I brought Bob along for all the hard questions. Okay, we'll get right to it. Minnesota forest land makes up about one-third of the area in Minnesota. The acreage of forest land in Minnesota has been rather stable over the last 30 to 40 years. It's comprised of multiple owners. 14% would be federal ownership, 25% state ownership, private ownership making up 46%, and county and municipal at 15%. So roughly about half public versus private. The public land supports, all the forest land supports wildlife habitat, the hunting and fishing economy in the state, the forest industry, tourism, other recreation, clean water and clean air. It's critical to rural communities and very important to Minnesota's economy. Minnesota timberland can be broken down by forest type, the largest of which and probably the most in demand currently is the aspen timber type at 36%. Next would be northern hardwoods, and then after that would be our softwood resource in that breakdown. Timber harvesting in Minnesota has remained fairly constant over the last 20 or so years. In 1988, about 3.21 million cords, and in 2004, the last year that we have good data on, about 3.5 or 3.6 million cords harvested in a given year. That's about 1% of the forest land throughout the state is harvested annually. Our wood used by product in Minnesota breaks down to about 39% pulp and paper, and 39% oriented strand board, or that product that is used primarily in the housing market. Lumber and specialty products comprise 17%, and energy currently at 5%. Forest products manufactured in Minnesota in billions of dollars, as you can see, is quite a range. Starting in 1980 at about $1.9 billion, has grown substantially over the years, peaking about the mid-90s at $7.8 billion generated, and 2004 at about $6.9. The value of, the locations of the paper, board, and sawmills that produce greater than 500,000 board feet in Minnesota looks about like this. And I'm not sure how much you can see, but there are 5 pulp and paper mills, 3 recycled pulp and paper mills, 3 hardboard and specialty mills, 6 oriented strand and structural board, 500-plus sawmills, 150 associate industries, and over 800 secondary manufacturers. Minnesota wood industry is the 4th largest manufacturing sector in the state based on number of people employed. It accounts for approximately 11% of all manufacturing dollars. The value-added impact of forest products and manufacturing is significant. For each dollar sold, roughly $42 is subsequently generated from the sale of timber stumpage. More than $4 billion of those dollars stay in Minnesota. The industry has more of that 40,000 employees, pays nearly $2 billion in wages each year. And the breakdown of the woods products industry, looking at where the locations are, I think the most important part of this graphic would be the lower right-hand column. If you notice that 44% of the industry is located within the 7-county metro area, and the rest throughout greater Minnesota. The DNR, the Division of Forestry and the Department is guided by statutory direction, and fire management constitutes fire protection, prevention, and suppression. As you can see, I won't read all the statute numbers. They're there for yourself. Open burning and oversight permits, state land management, there is timber sales, Minnesota Constitution guidance, as well as statutory guidance, reforestation and forest roads, forest inventory and monitoring, forest land management and planning, revenue sharing, and then cooperative forest management, where guidance for forest management plans, both on state, county, and municipal plans, county timber and land sales, and core program support covers pest control and forest recreation. The Division of Forestry accounts direct, open, and statutory appropriation is approximately $127 million. Special revenue or general revenue accounts for 53% of that. Special revenue at 18%. From the general fund, the $63 million of general fund money is broke down by $31.9 million will be used for fire suppression and prevention, and $35.4 million will be used for forest management. Special revenue, $23.9 million, the largest amount, roughly $9 million, will be used for fire suppression. Natural resource, $20.8 million. Through the FMIA of a forest management investment account. Federal share, about $11.7 million. Environment and natural resources, about $2.7 million. Game and fish, about $500,000. This is our DNR organization. Just very quickly, the Division of Forestry reports directly to the commissioner and deputy commissioner. It is part of the operations that includes enforcement, waters, parks and recreation, lands and minerals, fish and wildlife, and ecological services. The division structure breaks down to the field organization and central office organization. We have essentially three regions: the Northwest region, located in Bemidji with seven areas; the Northeast region, located, the headquarters located in Grand Rapids with eight areas; and Central region here at St. Paul with six areas. The Central office is responsible or manages resource management, fire protection, and further administration. Again, there are 21 administrative areas throughout the Division of Forestry. And I'd like to talk a little bit about our DNR forest management programs. The Division of Forestry manages approximately 4.5 million acres of state lands for multiple values. We are charged with protection of people, property, and natural resources from wildfires. We help to help landowners and communities plan, restore, and improve their forests. And we produce tree seedlings for conservation and planting on public and private lands. State land management produces, through timber sales, we sell about 800 to 850,000 cords of wood are sold annually each from state lands. The wood from state lands account for about 20% of the wood harvested in the state each year. We create or manage approximately 30,000 acres of habitat each year via interdisciplinary forest management and planning. We strive to maintain and improve things such forest values as old growth, mature forests, water quality, aesthetics, soil health, riparian areas, and wildlife habitat. Our forest road system is integral to our management, and our forest road system was originally created for and by forest management activity, including timber harvesting, but a high percentage of the time state forest roads are used for recreational purposes. They are accessed by motorized vehicles and many non-motorized uses as well. Monitoring is also another very important element of the division. We manage our lands using a level inventory CSA on state lands comprising of the 5 million acres. We have the inventory comprises a periodic permanent plot forest inventory, or the FIA data, forest inventory analysis across all ownerships, provides historic and data and changes in forest land and forest conditions. We work FIA in conjunction with the U.S. Forest Service. The first inventory was created in 1936 and was done every 10 to 15 years. Now, through the partnerships, we are providing information annually rather than waiting those 10 years. The growing use of remote sensing technology, satellite imagery, and aerial photography and change to detection helps create our management scenarios, and that completes our monitoring responsibilities. Fire management, our main duties of suppression and preparation. We have statewide responsibilities for fire management. Interagency cooperation for efficiency and effectiveness. This is provided through our Minnesota Interagency Fire Center located in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. These partners in the agency include the DNR, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, United States Forest Service, Voyageurs National Park, Bureau of Indian Administration, and Division of Emergency Management. Our fire prevention and program includes a significant education program through Smokey the Bear and FireWise programs, or open burning permits provided through our fire wardens also provides an element of education. We have prescribed fire, which is done through the Division of Forestry, which provides for management of wildlife habitat, ecological restoration, and reforestation. Cooperative forest management breaks down to assistance to non-industrial private forest landowners through the use of forest management plans and conservation projects. And it's a way to connect with landowners and also has a cost share, connecting with landowners through a cost sharing funding program. Community assistance, we provide technical assistance to communities and administration of grants such as Minnesota Relief. Our Minnesota nurseries are very important for supporting the rural economies. They have approximately a $2.3 million budget, $1.4 million in payroll. They purchase seeds and cones from various citizens, and the purchasing of seedlings from private nurseries to help meet the demands over and above the 10 million seedling cap that we currently have. 65% of the seedlings shipped from DNR nurseries are to private landowners, 35% to public owners, primarily DNR and counties, and other sources of seedlings are private nurseries in Minnesota, other states, and Canada. Minnesota DNR has achieved dual certification of state-administered lands, of the 4.1 million acres of state-administered lands. We achieved certification in December of 2005, and currently the largest SFI FSC certificates issued in the United States. The important things are the critical trends which are emerging with our changing forest products industry, changes in forest ownership and forest land development, invasive species, a growing demand for outdoor recreation, a loss and aging of experienced workforce, bioenergy, climate change, and emissions trading. Managing a vigorous forest products industry requires investment on state lands, continued work and certification, sustaining harvestable levels and supporting non-industrial private landowner management. Maintaining third-party certification by completing our OHV designation and implementation plans, completing our sustainable forest resource management plans, continued development of our internal software for our inventory, our forest inventory, and continued investments in monitoring and enhancing high conservation value forests. Continuing with challenges and opportunities, increasing land asset management demands by managing easements, leases, and boundary issues. We support working forests, working private forests through conservation easements, technical and cost share assistance, and certification. And continued investment in technology and forest management tools will include ecological classification system implementation, continued development of our software forest, remote sensing and purchasing of field data recorders, and forest modeling. In preparation for invasive pests, we are currently working with a multi-agency response, another opportunity to help manage this increasing issue. We're addressing the loss of leadership and experience from substantial near-term retirements. We need to understand the role and management in climate change and carbon management, another interesting development, meeting alternative energy demands through forest management. That concludes the overall view. Thank you. Any questions?
Okay, thank you very much, Chair Epperly. Representative Moe, question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Epperly, good to see you again. Thanks for coming for us today. My first question is back to the DNR forestry budget. It shows that 53%, and I think you said $63 million approximately, comes to DNR forestry through the general funds. Is that correct?
67.67.
We all know that the state of Minnesota also is in the business of selling timber and receives income from those sales. Could you first tell us about how much that is, and then also with the amount of number of sales we have outstanding right now, maybe let us educate us a little bit on the budgeting process for the DNR. How do you account for sales in your budgeting that have yet to be cut? Maybe if you want to add anything about the implications for your future budget from that. You understand my line of questioning here?
Yes, sir. Chairman Dill, Representative Moe, we do, and I do understand, and we do have a number of handouts, and Bob Tomlinson can provide the detail with regard to that question.
Okay. For the question, I'm sorry, in the discussion here with the administrator.
Mr. Tomlinson. Mr. Chair, Bob Tomlinson with the DNR Division of Forestry. Representative Moe, help me if I forget part of your question here.
Okay.
Relative to, it's about $67 million. I think the first part of your question, that's general fund appropriation to the DNR Division of Forestry. The first part of your question was where the timber sale receipts go and what do they amount to and how we might get some of those back. We basically harvest timber off of three primary land types: Concon lands, acquired lands, and trust fund lands. Those are the three general categories of lands that we're harvesting from. About 50% of the harvest comes off of trust fund lands, and the other 50% is split up between Concon and acquired lands. In the acquired lands, the total amount chart that we passed out that shows the bar chart here with the colors on it, will show you that in 2006 we harvested 687,000 cords of wood off of all those three ownerships combined. And on the back, the next page, there's a bar chart there that shows that in 2006 we received, down at the bottom there, $25.5 million in revenues from that. I'm just speaking here in generality with the split between the trust fund, the acquired, and the Concon, but basically half of that $25 million is off of trust fund lands, and roughly about half of that is certified as cost against putting up that timber for sale, and then comes back to the forest management investment account, which was part of that pie chart that Dave Epperly showed earlier there on the budget, the $127 million. The other half of the $25 million in revenue is Concon and acquired lands. 100% of the revenues off of acquired lands go into the forest management investment account, and 50% of the revenues off of Concon lands go into the forest management investment account. The other 50% go back to the counties in which the Concon lands are located, such as Beltrami, Roseau, Lake of Woods, and Aiken County, places like that. Right. So we're making, you know, a little bit of money for the county, you know, in that regards. So in total, we're about $25.5 million. About half of that, roughly, is going into the forest management investment account. And that money then is appropriated from you folks back to the Division of Forestry. That amount in 06 and 07, I believe, is $10.3 million per year out of that account to come back to the Division of Forestry to be used for the intentions of the Forest Management Investment Account, which is basically state land management. We don't use that money to pay for fire, and we don't use that money to pay for cooperative forest management programs and other things. We do use that money for inventory work on state lands, for planting trees, for helping pay for the foresters' time to put the timber up for sale, those sorts of things like that. I'm sorry, I've lost track of the other parts of the question.
Those were all leading to the direction I wanted to go. So right now, obviously, we have a number of sales that are uncut. Many of the foresters or the loggers are can't afford to cut those sales, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. When those sales aren't cut, how does the DNR handle that in your books? I mean, do you sell that originally? And the chairman was, I think, talked about this a little earlier. When you sell that, do you book that as in your future budget, or do you wait until that sale is actually cut and paid for completely? And maybe after you answer that question, if you talk a little bit about the implications for your budget, you know, based on having a significant number of outstanding sales.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moe, the reason I wanted to make sure that you took note of this sheet, because it's fairly important to note that there's a significant difference between what we plan for, what we offer, what we sell, and what we harvest in any given year. And keep in mind that when we sell timber in 2007, like we are right now, we are giving time for the loggers to harvest those, the purchasers of those sales, anywhere from 3 years, perhaps up to 5 years, no more than 5 years, usually on those sales. So there's a real lag time, and the thing that we get immediately is the down payment, 15% down, or some sort of bond surety that guarantees that they're going to harvest that sale. That money is counted for right away in the state's budget, and where it either goes into the general fund or back to the forest management investment account or however. So that's the way that part is it. The rest of it, the other 85% that we don't get, it's actually changed in 2006 where it's no longer 15% of the appraised price, it's now 15% of the bid value, which can be a little bit more than the appraised price in today's market, but not much more as it was a year ago. But nevertheless, that amount of money comes into the coffers immediately. We count that into our calculations as far as what's available in the forest management investment account. And we also then forecast for future years and what's going to become available relative to what's being sold and what's likely to be harvested in different years out and that sort of thing. So that's the way it works, is that we're basically going through the forecasting. And the fund statement right now shows a balance in the forest management investment account above and beyond the $10.3 million that we're currently appropriated out of the legislature for the 07 fiscal year.
And so currently you're and for your fiscal year next year, the Mr. Chairman, excuse me.
All right. I had a question too, so yeah. I'm following you now.
Yeah. So that's not curtailing your forest management practice plans for next year based on our outstanding sales currently.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moore, thanks for that question. It's rather important to us, and we've been asking the same question of the economists and folks and others that do the forecast for us and figure this out. And we've been told that we're in pretty good state relative to the funding holding up, if you will, out of the dedicated accounts, at least through the 08 and 09 biennium. Because a lot of the sales that are being harvested right now, presumably, would be sales that were bought earlier in the five-year period, not necessarily ones that were bought in the tail end of calendar year 04 or any of 05, where they were bought at higher prices, perhaps, but ones that were bought rather in 02 and 03 at more reasonable bid-up prices. And those sales are still being harvested, a lot of those, and coming in. And so we're feeling pretty good about the revenues coming in at least through fiscal year 08 and 09. I just want to emphasize that. And the economists will tell us that we can't make any bets beyond that, what might be there.
Ms. Donaldson, can we go back for a minute to the... I know this isn't the Finance Committee, but I think it's important for these members and for myself to understand it. You talked about the 15% of the sale price that was booked currently, and you mentioned the letters of credit sale bond sales, but I didn't hear you say how that was booked. And the way you presented it, I got the sense that the entire amount of the value of the wood was booked in the current year on a letter of credit and a bonded sale. Is that correct, or is that not booked until you actually cut it and start receiving the payments? You understand the question?
Mr. Chair, I think I understand the question. What you're asking about is the ones where they have the bonded sales were 100% guarantee on that the sale would be cut. Whether or not those dollars are being counted in immediately in the accounts where they would ultimately end up with there. I don't know the answer to that, but we will find that out and get back to you on that.
Okay, because as I look at the list of sales, there's a lot of bonded sales as well. On outstanding sales today, there's a lot of bonded wood out in the marketplace.
Mr. Chair and members, my understanding is currently there's about 2.8 million cords worth of wood that has been sold but not yet harvested, that's valued at about $99 million. And of that, about $17 million of that has been bonded. Is the word
million.
Now, again, we're working these numbers really quickly at, your request, and they may change a bit, but that's my understanding as of right now, that it's a fairly 17%, basically, of all the outstanding sales that we have that would be bonded.
Mr. Epperly?
Mr. Chair, also in addition to your specific question, it's my understanding that once this permit is bonded or secured, it allows the permittee to be able to operate that sale. Once that sale is operated, they need to be able to pay for that stumpage through that permit. So we can check on the numbers to see how that works through on an annual basis, but that's that's the system as it works. And the other point that I wanted to offer for some clarity, and I think Bob or Mr. Tomlinson hit on the idea, is if you look at this chart, the timber sale history, and you look at the column in red where it says cords cut, that is what Mr. Tomlinson referred to as that was sold over a period of 5 years. Mm-hmm. Those are the cords that are coming forward, not those that are planned, not those that are offered, or those that are sold. So in that year, it they come over the 5 years of the life of the permit.
Okay. Any other questions, and then we'll go on with the other presenters. Okay, thank you very much. You're going to stick around in case I'm sure we're going to have questions on that when the bill that we're going to hear today comes up before us. With that, if we could quickly go around the room and make an introduction, which we skipped earlier because we didn't have many members here, just enough to make a quorum. We'll start with Representative Peterson. Where are you from? You know the drill. We've done this many
times. Thank you, Chairman. Representative Aaron Peterson from Rockefeller County. I represent 2 million acres, which about 98% of is not forest. But I'm happy to be on your committee and served on environment, finance, and policy in the past. So, thank you.
Jean Wiginius from the very south part of Minneapolis between Diamond Lake and Lake Nokomis. Glad to be here.
Representative Carla Bigham from 57A, which is parts of Cottage Grove, parts of South St. Paul, St. Paul Park, Newport, Great Cloud Island Township, and I'm looking forward to the discussions in this committee.
Thank you, Terry Morrow, District 23A, Nickel County, a part of Sibley County.
Representative Frank Moore, District 4A, which is all the way over almost to Grand Rapids. The Chippewa National Forest is almost completely within the confines of my district, and as is the Ainsworth plant, which lost one of the lines a few months ago.
Representative Kate Knuth, represent part of the northern suburbs, New Brighton, Arden Hills, a little bit of Shoreview, a little bit of Fridley.
Representative Dill, I represent the Arrowhead of Minnesota with the Superior National Forest in it, and also an Ainsworth plant that's now closed, hundreds of people out of work, hundreds and hundreds of people out of work. One of the things we'll be looking at is the reason why they're out of work and why our wood isn't as competitive as other states.
Representative Tony Cornish, I represent Blue Earth, Faribault, and Waseca counties. I live in Good Thunder, and my area largely borders Iowa.
Good afternoon, Representative Dean Simpson. I represent District 10B, which consists of half of Ottertail County, all of Wadena County, and parts of Becker County.
I'm Joe Hoppe. I represent Chanhassen and Chaska, half of the better half of Carver County.
I'm Danny Magnum. I represent the Northern Dakota, Southern Washington County. I live in Hastings, and I spent 30 years in the tree and landscape business, so this is a committee that I'm very interested in and look forward to working with Representative Chairman Dill and moving forward in a number of issues.
Representative Tom Hackbarth, I represent Northern Anoka County, District 48A, and also the City of Elk River in Sherman County.
And we'll start with staff, right over with Andrew at the page.
I'm Andrew, Chief Sec. I'm the lead page for this committee. I'm Dr. Ramsey, and so I think it should be interesting.
Eileen Short, Vehicle Process Research, South Minneapolis.
Andrew Dorr from Pine County, a Community Legislative Assistant.
Kirk Napka, Community Administrator from South St. Paul.
John Dillon, Legislative Analyst with House Research, South Minneapolis.
Ed Warner, House Republican Research from Arden Hills.
And we had Representative Hansen. We're just doing quick introductions in the middle of all this.
Rick Hansen, District 39A, South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Northern Dakota County.
All right. And as I said, we do have two things. Representative Hackbarth, for those of you who don't know, we used to be was formerly the chair of the Environment Policy Committee, and Representative Wiginius is now the chair of Environment, Natural Resources, Finance. So we got a huge resources here. you know, chair, committee chairs, former committee chairs that know a lot about this, so they can help us along as well. So with that, the next person up on our agenda is Dave Zumeta from the Forest Resources Council. You'd introduce yourself and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and representatives, I'm Dave Zumeta. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Forest Resources Council. And I have two hats on today. I want to wear one of them briefly and then the other for most of my time. First off, there's some handouts being sent around. I purposely didn't bring a PowerPoint, but I did bring some paper. So what you're receiving is, first off, a 2006 annual report to the governor and legislature from the Minnesota Forest Resources Council, which is hot off the press, and then also a copy of the governor's task force report on the competitiveness of Minnesota's primary forest products industry that was completed in mid-December and delivered to the governor. And there's a great deal in that report that is germane to your discussions that'll follow me. In terms of the council, I just want to very briefly cover a couple of things. If you'd bear with me for a minute and turn to page 3 of the of this report, the annual report to the governor and the legislature. Hopefully you all have it by now. If you don't, you will in a minute. The Forest Resources Council is a 17-member organization that works to promote long-term sustainable management and protection of Minnesota's forests. And it does this in two ways. It carries out some programs that were laid out in the Sustainable Forest Resources Act in 1995 by the legislature, and it also advises the governor and federal, state, county, and local governments on sustainable forest policies and practices. Council has 17 members. 16 are appointed by the governor, including the chair. They're listed on the bottom right of page 3. The Minnesota Indian Affairs Council appoints its own member, separate from the governor, recognizing the tribal designation as separate nations under federal law. Council accomplishments are summarized on pages 1 and 2, and then there's more detail in the rest of the report. And I really didn't come today to talk about my council, but I did want to deliver this to you. I have a meeting with my chair, Al Sullivan, with Representative Wagenius tomorrow, with Representative Dill and Representative Eakin tomorrow to deliver this to you more formally and talk about this. But it was available, so I thought I'd take advantage of the opportunity. I want to spend most of my time talking about this report, the final report to the governor, the other handout that you have. I want to be clear, I am staff to this governor's task force. I was the co-chair of the working group that helped the task force produce this report. So I'm speaking in a staff capacity relative to this report. And it doesn't necessarily reflect the views of the Forest Resources Council or me personally, so I want to make that clear. But I was asked to cover it, and I will. You'll see on the inside cover there's a couple of letters. One is a letter of conveyance from the co-chairs of this task force, Commissioner Sandy Lehman, the Iron Range Resources, and former Commissioner Gene Miriam of the Department of Natural Resources to the governor. And then the governor's response, December 21, indicating some of the things he thought were important to emphasize relative to this task force. If you look on the inside of page 3, there's a list of task force members. Besides the co-chairs, you see that there's quite a number of representatives from the logging industry. You're going to hear from Mr. Scott Dane. He was a member of this task force right after I'm done. And also Dave Epperly, who you just heard from, was on the task force. There were three other logging industry representatives. There were 9 forest products industry representatives, a couple of county land commissioners, Forest Service Representative, University of Minnesota Representative, and Acting Commissioner of Department of Employment and Economic Development is also in the task force. The executive summary gives you a pretty good idea of what's in this task force. Primary forest products industry, vital to Minnesota's economy. Dave Epperly gave you some degree of an overview of it. It's also extremely important relative to the health and viability of forests in a whole variety of respects in terms of wildlife habitat management, in terms of forest protection, relative to forest health issues and so on, invasive species, many, many recreational benefits coming from what the industry and the management agencies do relative to managing forests. The forest industry is in very rough shape, and there's some very tough times up in northern Minnesota in particular. A lot of concern about the logging industry and the logging infrastructure. The downturn in the housing market that we experienced in the last number of months is a primary immediate cause resulting in shutdowns of Ainsworth mills across several communities in northern Minnesota, hundreds of layoffs, some permanent, some indefinite, a lot of spin-off layoffs occurring in the logging and trucking industries as a result of that, and a great deal of distress in the economy and in the communities in that part of the state. This led to the governor calling this task force together. As a similar task force had been convened back in 2003 following a couple hundred layoffs by UPM Kimony Blend and Paper Company in Grand Rapids. And that task force had done quite a lot of work that the governor liked. So that task force had sunset back in February of 2006. So he can reconvene it in a reconfigured form with some additional members to address what he viewed as an emergency in the fall of last year. Task force was charged with developing near-term and long-term recommendations for addressing the situation with the forest products industry and the logging infrastructure. He came up with 31 near-term recommendations, only had 2 months to do this. In this report, you'll see that they said they couldn't address the long-term recommendations, needed more time, and recommended to the governor that the task force be reconvened between early 2007 and May of 2007. And the governor, in his letter back to the co-chairs, agreed that he wanted the task force to be reconvened. The 31 recommendations are, as I mentioned, near-term administrative and legislative recommendations. Most of those administrative recommendations have been carried out, though there are some additional ones. The most urgent administrative actions relate to wood and fiber availability and price of wood, and those are very, very important. And as I mentioned, a lot of them have been carried out. They're addressed in the appendix to this report, Appendix 2. The longer term recommendations, the governor's office is working actively on reconfiguring the task force, setting up the facilitator for the task force, and I anticipate that the task force will be reconvened in the near future through the spring to follow the governor's request for developing long-term recommendations. In terms of the recommendations, I don't have time here and I don't want to take the time to go through them line by line, but let me say that a couple of them related to of particular interest to you, Mr. Chair, and I think the rest of the committee, Mr. Dane will address after I'm done here. There are a number related to my counsel that I'll just point out aren't recommendations that I put in here personally. They came from the task force, so just a caveat relative to that. And I think with that, I will stop. So then, and I'd be happy to field any questions you have. I'd also urge you to recall that Mr. Epperly and also Mr. Dane were members of the task force, and they may be able to answer questions as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Zimetta? Okay, thank you. Next up, we will have Mr. Dane from the Associated Contract Loggers and Truckers. And also, when the bill is before us, Mr. Dane, we need to have you as a possible resource person, so don't leave after your presentation.
Okay, thank you.
State your name for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
My name is Scott Dane. I serve as the Executive Director for the Associated Contract Loggers and Truckers of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before this committee, Mr. Chairman and representatives. I did send some information ahead, which I'm assuming you've got in front of you this time. I'd like to go over a bit of that information regarding the timber industry crisis that's threatening the loggers and truckers in Minnesota here, as well as the mills. We talk about the forest industry and the forest program of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and I think it's important to remember as we look at the finances of it that the actual objective of the Minnesota DNR is to have a forest program and forest management that will ensure a healthy, productive forest in Minnesota. It's not necessarily to generate revenue as a priority or to create jobs for Minnesota loggers or the mills. However, it's also important to note that the loggers provide the means with which the Minnesota DNR is able to fulfill their forest management obligations there. And the mills utilize this resource to produce value-added products and jobs in Minnesota. Therefore, it's imperative that the state of Minnesota recognize the need to protect and preserve this vital industry infrastructure, which is being threatened by, as Mr. Zimetta mentioned, the collapse of the housing market, closure of mills, and plummeting timber values. Recently, the trends in timber values have showed a marked decline over 12 months ago. 12 months ago, you were seeing stumpage prices at state timber auctions selling as high as $80 a cord. Today, you're seeing stumpage prices selling in the mid-20s per cord. That's, you know, you're looking at a 66% decrease in the value of timber out there. These rapidly deflating prices and values create a large volume of timber under contract with the state of Minnesota that cannot profitably be harvested, and these contracts cannot be exercised. There are some attachments which I sent in which showed some graphs which I think are good for quick reference from Beltrami County as well as the state of Minnesota showing the rapid escalation in prices and stumpage in 2005 and then the rapid de-escalation in prices in 2006. Now, this information doesn't take into account the most current and recent auctions. You're looking at averages as an example, averages in the 50s, but if you look at timber that's sold recently, it's more likely in the mid-20s to $30 per cord range. And that's important to realize. The Governor's Task Force recommendations address this issue as well, that there's a need to address this volume of timber that was under contract with the state of Minnesota and other public land agencies that was priced beyond what the market could bear today. What that's going to do is it puts the logger or the permit holder, whether it be the mill or somebody else, in a position that they have to look at, can they harvest this timber profitably or not? And the reality is, in many cases, they cannot. The actions taken by the state of Minnesota and the governor and the governor's task force and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and other counties as well has sent a very encouraging message to the industry, to the mills that are internationally owned, in fact most of them are internationally owned in Minnesota, as they look at the competitiveness of Minnesota and the viability of remaining in Minnesota. And as an example, recently Weyerhaeuser in Deerwood came out with a press release, which is attached to the information I provided you, showing that they were shutting down their mill in Kentucky, as well as Ontario, Canada. Ontario, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, Kenora, Ontario, excuse me. They are going to keep their mill in Deerwood operating on an abbreviated production schedule. That's actually good news when you look at it. We could have been shut down like these other plants with permanent job losses exceeding what's occurring in Deerwood right now. The plant up in Ontario was built in 2003. It's the largest facility in the world that produces this product up there. You would think that that would be the most efficient facility and therefore would stay open with the new $250 million investment that occurred up there 3 years ago. My point here is that I believe that Weyerhaeuser is watching what Minnesota is doing here, and what we've done and what's pending will make a difference in their decisions to remain in Minnesota. Providing legislative relief from bonded and unbonded overvalued timber contracts will reinforce the message within the forest products industry that Minnesota is genuinely committed to ensuring and improving the competitiveness of the timber industry. Recently, I traveled with a contingent of loggers from Minnesota, this is pretty surprising, to Colorado to go out there. We were contacted by officials in Colorado at the local, county, state, and federal level to come out there and explore what role Minnesota loggers could play in addressing their lodgepole pine infestation. They have a diseased forest out there that is providing no benefit, no public benefit to the region, and in fact is an extreme hazard for them out there. The reason they called Minnesota loggers to come out there was they looked around and said, we've got all these diseased trees, we need to cut them down and process them. Then they said, where'd the loggers go? They said, there are no loggers in Colorado anymore to speak of. What happened to them? Well, 20 years ago, we got so tight with regulations that we ran them out of the area, and they're gone now. So they've had no forest management program. They have an over-mature forest over there that's vulnerable, susceptible to disease and fire, and that's why they called Minnesota loggers to come out there and look at what options we could present to them, because our seasons actually complement one another as far as harvest seasons, ours being primarily winter and theirs being primarily summer. Again, my point here is that this situation demonstrates the negative consequences of not supporting an active timber program and the resultant loss of logging and mill infrastructure. And that's our priority as we try to tackle this crisis, is that we preserve the logging and mill infrastructure in Minnesota, because once it's gone, we won't get it back, just like Colorado and other states. So the forest products industry in Minnesota is at a monumental crossroads. The actions taken by the state of Minnesota will determine whether the timber industry recovers and continues to support the forest management objectives of the Minnesota DNR, or follows the path of Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and other western states who are suffering the consequences of not supporting the forest products industry and now struggle with diseased and dying forests which contribute nothing to the public benefit. The state of Minnesota is the single most significant public agency that requires and benefits from the role that the forest products industry contributes to forest management. As a primary stakeholder, the state of Minnesota is in a position to recognize and demonstrate long-term vision and leadership through support of this important economic sector of the rural Minnesota economy. That's the information I provided you to review prior to my speaking here. And in listening to the others speak, I think it's important to point out one or two other things here. I represent the logging industry of Minnesota. These are small companies, generally 10 to 15 people at the most. However, they're very vital, important jobs in rural Minnesota, particularly in northern Minnesota and the area up there. Some people wonder, these contracts that we're concerned about are such a value that they will be defaulted upon. Now, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources has two policies. One is, if you default on a down payment sale, at this time, you forfeit your down payment, which is 15% of the appraised value. However, if you choose to secure that sale with a different security instrument, being a letter of credit or a bond, you are liable for 100% of the bid-up value. Now, we have an extreme disparity here between the liability to the permit holder, which treats different permit holders differently. And as an example, I'd like to share a couple of letters which I was not able to attach to the information I provided you, but the financial institutions that are so instrumental in supporting this highly capital intensive industry anymore, logging is not comprised of a chainsaw today. Logging is comprised of expensive equipment. The rule of thumb is if you were to go into logging today, it would take $2 million to go into logging. So my point here is we need financial partners in this, and these financial partners provide letters of credit to mills and loggers to secure timber. And they're very concerned about the future of those letters of credit if they're actually exercised and called on. A letter from the Security State Bank, which has offices in Aiken, Garrison, and Grand Marais, states that should the Minnesota DNR exercise their option to call these letters of credit in the event of default, financial losses to our organization and the permit holder will have serious consequences. Future financial participation in the forest products industry would be compromised. And a similar letter was submitted by the Board of State Bank of International Falls and the Farm Credit Bureau as well. So this issue of providing some relief to loggers and permit holders and mills for contracts that cannot profitably exercise is critical. That being said, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity and your interest in this issue. It's very critical that we preserve this industry because, like I said, if we lose it, we won't get it back. At this time, I'd be happy to take any questions you may have for me.
Are there any questions for Mr. Dane? I have one. Mr. Dane, right now, as you know, in northern Minnesota, timber's going for a lot less. I think I talked to Bob Milne, the county land commissioner, last week, and he said the most recent sale was averaged about $32. And he's also saying, though, a lot of loggers are having difficulty finding a place to sell that wood once they do cut it. I mean, could you comment on that a little bit from your membership?
The shutdown of Ainsworth plants, permanent and temporary, the cutbacks of the Boise plant up in International Falls, Trust Joyce has cut back their production, and Louisiana Pacific has also. It's taken demand off the market for 600,000 to 800,000 cords of wood a year right now. However, Ainsworth is actually building inventory in Cook considerably right now at this time, and new pricing structures have come out that will support the production costs of the product that these mills produce. And so if the raw material costs come down like they are, as you mentioned, then it will make these companies, it will enable these companies to be profitable and go back into production. But there are difficult times for specific loggers to find markets who may have been 90% Ainsworth producers. But we know we need to get that wood down if we can get them back opened up again.
Thank you, Mr. Dan. I know there's representatives of Ainsworth here, and we're grateful that they're buying wood, so thanks. Any other questions for Mr. Dan? Thank you.
Thank you. I'll stay.
And yeah, you'll probably be interested. I'm sure you'll be interested in the bill that we're hearing today.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Mr. Wayne Grant, Minnesota Forest Industries, and Minnesota Timber Producers Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Wayne Brandt. I'm Executive Vice President of Minnesota Forest Industries and the Minnesota Timber Producers Association. I've got a couple of handouts. These are just some fact sheets on some different topics, and then there's a briefing packet that staff will be sending around shortly, which I'll refer to. I don't intend to go over this lovely tome. It's probably more than any of you wanted to know about various issues related to the forest products industry, to logging, and to public land management and the economy here in the state. But you can read it at your leisure. There are, or peruse it. There are contact names and phone numbers for myself, for my staff, for the other folks that represent us here at the Capitol. So feel free to contact us at any point. You'll see in the packets that it touches on economics of the industry, on the forest land base, timber supply and utilization, public timber programs, a section on the environmental commitment of our loggers in our industry. I would note for Representative Peterson and I were chatting the other day, renewable power is a hot topic. The forest products industry in Minnesota is, we believe, the leading industry on renewable power in the state. We generate from renewable sources 28% of the electricity that we use in our plants, and also utilize additional biomass for heating kilns at sawmills and other locations. You see in the front that I do represent two organizations, Minnesota Forest Industries, whose members are primary manufacturers of forest products, and also the Minnesota Timber Producers Association, who are loggers, small sawmills scattered throughout the state. We have members in the Timber Producers Association from the Iowa border to the Canadian border, and kind of all points in between. Mr. Dane and I have a number of overlapping interests and members. I was glad to see Scott able to be here today. At the beginning and the end of it with forestry here in Minnesota and with the forest products industry, sustainable forestry is what our business is all about. It's the beginning, it's the middle, and the end of what we do, of our past, our present, and our future. Minnesota has been an important leader and played an important role in sustainable forestry in our country, in our state, in our region. Mr. Zemeta spoke, the executive director of the Forest Resources Council. He was modest about the Forest Resources Council and the Sustainable Forest Resources Act's accomplishments through the years. It was legislation that was enacted in 1995 to set it up. Two important programs from the Forest Resources Council that I would like to highlight. The first would be the site level program, which through the years has developed, revised, and continued to revise and update voluntary guidelines for the management, the sustainable management of our forest resources here in the state. There's also a strong monitoring component to the guideline activities. We believe that that is the bedrock on which these types of programs that are voluntary in nature are built. If we don't have monitoring that can demonstrate to you, that can demonstrate to the citizens of the state that in fact these programs are being followed, that in fact they're being implemented, and that in fact they are making a difference for the resources on the ground, we don't have that, then all we have is a lot of conversation. So the monitoring of the guidelines is very important. Forest Resources Council also has landscape coordination and planning program where individual citizens and people from different perspectives on a goodwill basis get together throughout the regions of the state. They put together what they think is important in their state. Council largely provides staffing to that activity to help those citizens with that, but is not directive in what those processes are. For those of you that are interested, I'm sure Mr. Zemeta would be happy to share with you those landscape documents and point out the differences in them, because the citizens of our state have different approaches in west central Minnesota than they do in northeastern Minnesota, and different approaches in the far northern part of the state than in southeastern Minnesota. We think that's a strength of this landscape program, and the objectives that they lay out are then utilized by the council, they're utilized by county land departments, by the DNR, by the U.S. Forest Service, as they plan out their activities for decades to come, to look and see what's important, and those objectives have been very key in many of those planning processes. my organizations and others established the Minnesota Logger Education Program, helped establish it and provided initial funding a decade ago. It's a program that provides training on a variety of environmental, safety, business management, and other topics. We're very pleased that with some 400 logging contractors having completed and continuing to keep their accreditation with that program updated, that in excess of 90% of the wood that's harvested in our state is harvested by loggers who have been through this training in sustainable management on an ongoing basis. And I always find it a little bit interesting that I'm not sure, I don't keep up on the judicial bar, but for a number of years we were requiring more hours of training on an annual basis for our loggers than was required to keep the law license. But then at some level logging is more complicated than the practice of law, certainly more complicated than it was decades ago. Minnesota also has been a leader in the certification of forest lands. Several different programs out there. There's information in the packets on that. We think this is also something that's vital to continuing our social license to harvest trees here in our state. These are third-party programs that have standards with independent auditors that come in and review the practices and activities of the landowners that are involved in those programs, be they the DNR, which is certified, many of the counties are certified, industrial and other land ownerships that are certified. We think that's another way of demonstrating our commitment to sustaining the resources that we have here in Minnesota. You know, as you can tell, we're proud of the way forestry is practiced here in our state, and we're proud of the part that our loggers and our companies have played in that practice of sustainable forestry. Minnesota has been a leader worldwide. We continue to be a leader, and it's our commitment to you and to the citizens of the state that we as an industry and as loggers will continue to do our part for Minnesota to continue to be a leader in sustainable management. We have a number of priorities for this session. We're excited about this session. Think there are a lot of things that can get done and that need to be addressed. These are difficult economic times for our industry, with the temporary closures of mills, with the permanent closure of one line in Bemidji. Approximately 25% of the demand is currently offline. We are hopeful and optimistic that the bulk of that will be restarted sooner rather than later, but it does mean that we are in the midst of a very difficult winter, and a winter that is seeing much pain for many individuals in the forested part of the state, from loggers to the workers in the plants that are laid off and to the main street of our economies in the forested areas of our state. A few of our priorities this session are as follows. We'd like to see the legislature remove the sunset for the Sustainable Forest Resources Act, and the which includes the Forest Resources Council and its activities, scheduled to sunset June 30th of this year. We would hope that the legislature would remove that sunset and recognize the good collaborative work that's being done through the council. We'd like to see the programs to provide technical and financial assistance to family forest landowners, people that own 20, 40, 60, 80, 100 acres out there. We'd like to see those rebuilt. They took a hit during the budget difficulties of the preceding years, and we would hope that we would see the wisdom of providing that assistance so they can do the best management possible to meet their objectives on their lands. We'd like to see the inventory program and activity for the state, for the DNR, and hopefully for the counties too, strengthened so that they can have an ability to have updated inventories on a much shorter cycle than they've been able to do previously. That inventory data is the key to all of the decision making that's made on managing the forests out there. If you don't have a good up-to-date inventory, you're spending a lot of time spinning your wheels, trying to update sites as you look at them for potential management activities, and we think that that would be a sound policy and financial investment also. Obviously with the DNR, and this isn't a funding committee, but we like to see as many boots out in the woods as we can. The DNR has got a similar problem as some parts of our forest land with an aging population, and there's a need for the DNR to have sufficient numbers of people out in the woods doing the management on the ground. That's sometimes physical work, and some of us older guys don't probably have an ability to get around the way some of the younger kids out of college can do that. So we'd like to see that maintained, and also the maintaining the forest land base. You know, as you go through other hearings, you'll probably be hearing a lot about that in finance, the Forest Legacy Program, which has been important to maintaining the forest land base. I just also highlight that the Forest Resources Council is working on a project to evaluate the tools that are out there for maintaining the forest land base, from tax policy to fee title ownership to conservation easements, zoning, incentives, technical assistance programs, and would then be, if that project goes forward, coming back to this legislature with a set of recommendations on how to most efficiently and effectively use each of those tools to have the greatest impact on maintaining the forest land base. We don't have any interest, I mean, we're off the forest. We don't have any interest in seeing the forest parcelized, paved, or removed from forested status. I guess the last thing, and I have a few others, but the last one that I'll highlight is an area of research. We have not invested as heavily into several research and information transfer topics for decision making as we think would be wise for the citizens of the state. There's a legislature several years ago transferred the interagency information cooperative to the University of Minnesota. We think that providing the ability and getting them going to transfer the best technical information out to public and private land managers makes sense, as well as some potential investments in key research topics. So I think at the end of the day, as a representative of loggers in the forest products industry here in the state, I'd like you to know that we want what we think all of Minnesotans want for our forests. We want healthy forests. We want a secure forest land base that's not going to be paved over. We want to see sustainable forestry practices in our state, and we want to see a healthy and secure forest-based economy. And we would pledge to you and the other citizens of the state that we will do our part to achieve those objectives in working with you and others on these topics. Be happy to respond to any questions.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Brandt, for coming before us. I'm sorry I wasn't here when you came up. Always a pleasure to see you here.
Mr. Chairman, you've heard it all before.
I have. Questions for Mr. Brandt? Anyone?
Sure.
Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brandt, just you brought up two points that I think are of great interest, well, a lot of things, but specifically research and then your ability to hire employees. I don't think it's any surprise to most people in this room that there's not many foresters coming out of the University of Minnesota. Maybe you could comment on a little bit where your corporations are maybe getting your foresters from, stealing them from the counties, or and maybe we could, in the long term, in higher ed and Chairman Rukavina's committee, look at establishing a school of forestry up in Hibbing or something like that, perhaps closer to the resource. Maybe that would make it more likely that we would be able to attract forestry students.
Well, Representative Moe, be careful, because we got Epperly by stealing him from the county.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe, we have a very significant concern about the numbers of foresters that are being educated. Right now, if you look at new hires, they come from the University of Minnesota. They come from the University of Wisconsin at Stevens Point. Some come from Michigan Tech up in Houghton. Those are the three primary places that they come from. The counties provide a wonderful entry-level place for young foresters, and the we steal them, the DNR steals them, the feds steal them. We recently, last fall, did a survey of forest needs for foresters within Minnesota and Wisconsin over the next decade. And there's a need for some 400 foresters, some 40 a year, in the public and private agencies just here in Minnesota. We're currently turning out, I believe it's about 15, under 20 per year out of the University of Minnesota. You know, we think that that whole program area needs to be trained, needs to be strengthened. We have so communicated to the regents, to the to President Brunix, to Dean Levine, the newly appointed dean of the merged College of Natural Resources and Agriculture, and we hope that they will step up to the plate. I've also had meetings with Joe Sertich, who has a son that seems to be doing well down here in the legislature. He's president of the combined Minsky system in northeastern Minnesota, about how best to integrate the programs at the Minsky system with the University of Minnesota to attract students into this profession, which is very rewarding, and to attract more of them so that we can meet the needs. We don't have any desire to be looking all over the countryside, all over the country for foresters. We'll do that if we are forced to. The DNR will do that if forced to. But I think, you know, we'd like to see young women and men here in our state that have an interest in the outdoors going through institutions here in Minnesota so that we can hire them. They're good jobs and they're fun jobs. We've communicated those availabilities and also some information about compensation back to the DNR and specifically the county boards. We think they need to pay their foresters better. You know, we it's good work, but we want to see them appropriately compensated to make a good living. We'd like to see everybody make a good living. And I forget the first part of your question.
Yeah,
just a quick follow-up then. So I could assume that, that the industry, Mr. Chair, thank you, the industry would be interested in seeing forestry students not educated in urban area here in Minnesota, perhaps?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe, you know, we want to see them educated. We want to see them have broad education. You know, we think that one of the challenges that is out there for attracting more students is the kids that want to go into wildlife, fisheries, forestry, generally do so because they want to be out with the resources. They don't necessarily want to be in an urban environment. University of Minnesota's used to be College of Natural Resources, has outreach stations and programs in Cloquet where they send the students to Grand Rapids at Itasca State Park. And we think that that aspect of the curriculum should be strengthened, of having more field experience. One of the reasons that quite a few foresters get hired out of Stevens Point is it has been a more of a field experienced area. We don't look at it as a need to, you know, necessarily transfer programs out of St. Paul, out of the existing college structures that they're in, as much as it is to strengthen the whole system and to provide opportunities for students that want to learn in a rural environment, want to have the advantages of our higher education system. You know, we think that with better integration between the Minsky system and the University of Minnesota, that that can be accomplished. You know, we're proud of the School of Forestry at the University of Minnesota. It is the number one ranked School of Forestry in the country. Number one. There's nobody better. So we wouldn't want to see that weakened. We'd like to see that expanded and duplicated here in our state.
All right. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to the bill that's before us. It's House File 299, of which
we do support
the
bill, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you very much for your testimony. And keep stick around because I'm sure we'll have questions for you. And so, Representative Moe, if you'll chair the meeting, I'll go forward and present. Almost, this is almost like an ejection seat. Ms. Chair, I'd like to move House File 299, recommended to pass, be referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Go ahead.
Okay, to the bill. Members, this bill before you today is in response to a precipitous decline in the timber market. As you've heard from at least three of the presenters, the bill specifically addresses two or three of the points of the governor's task force recommendation, which is in a booklet that was passed out to you earlier that talks about giving relief in the document. It's on page 8, item 10 and 11. It says that proposed legislation, that this is in the governor's task force recommendation. You have a booklet before you. It was presented by a previous presenter. It says proposed legislation that would enable the DNR and encourage county boards to provide relief from non-secured contracts. And also from the next item, number 11, is secured contracts. And I think that the most important thing in the footnote of the entire report to me was on page 6 of that report, it says in the footnote, near-term recommendations to include administrative and legislative actions that should be taken between December of 06 and the end of the 2007 legislative session. So I think that really sums up the urgency that is before us. Very quickly, the bill, as presented before you today, would enable the Executive Council of the State of Minnesota, which consists of the Governor, Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of State, Auditor, State Auditor, and the Attorney General, to make some findings, declare essentially an urgency, set a date of the beginning of the urgency, and set an ending date of the end of the urgency, and then between there, authorize the DNR Commissioner to renegotiate sales that had been issued during that period of time. And the renegotiation could include, or will include, the refunding of the 15% that's paid on the appraised value of the sale when it's made, purchased by the company or by the logger, and to also cancel the contract, which would release the companies who use bonds or letters of credit to secure the sales from those contracts. Now, the real purpose of that isn't to not get money. I mean, really, we're in this to sustain a forest and to receive money from it. But the problem is that the timber cost went up and up and up, almost skyrocketing up to almost unprecedented heights, $75 a cord for aspen in many instances. And today that price is down around $26 a cord. So imagine a forest as you drive up and down a road, and there's trees in all directions up in Representative Moe and my district, Representative Simpson's district, and others. And those trees have already been sold to a logging company or to a paper company, and they're on a 3 to 5 year contract. And the state certainly has the trust, the school trust, the state, the counties all have an expectation that they're going to get money from those sales. But because the logger says, if I can only get $25 or $27 a cord for the actual wood now, for the product, not for the processing cost, but for the product, and I have to pay $70 or $60 or $75 or $80, I'm not going to even bother cutting that wood, and I'm going to sit here for 3 to 5 years and see if the market comes back to me so that I can afford to cut it. And if the market doesn't come back, we end up with a 15%, and we lose the 85%. But in the interim, we have mills that are such as in Representative Moe's district, in my district, Representative Solberg's district, that don't have wood. They can't keep their mills running. They can't be competitive with other states. And so really the purpose of this bill, in the final conclusion, is to bring an orderly restore on the short term, as the recommendations of the governor's task force said, a short-term reorganization of the price of the wood that was sold in basically 2005 and bring it to the 2007 level so that there's again an orderly progression of buyers and sellers for the wood so that we can actually harvest the wood, get the money into our accounts, and do the right thing for the forest. Much like the same thing happens in the stock market. If an unusual set of circumstances is detected, if there's some corporate misdoings, very recently it's been stock options that are issued and backdated, if you read the papers, they'll halt trading on the market, and they'll let the market find a new equilibrium, and then they'll reopen trading again. And that usually is lower. Well, that's exactly what's going to happen here. Now, the reason why I chose the Executive Council, and there's some discussion about why doesn't the legislature just put a fix in right now and tell the DNR to do this in law and give the Executive Council, why does this bill propose that we give the Executive Council future authority to, again, beyond this present dilemma, do a new dilemma that might occur in the timber industry now, in a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? Well, the reason is, members, is because, and we thought long and hard about how to get this done. My first reaction was, we're going to go in there, we're going to pass a bill, we're going to tell the DNR what to do, and we're going to have them give them the 15% back and be done with it. And get it back on the market, get it resold so that next winter it can get reharvested, or get harvested. But then I went to all the meetings, and the stuff started hitting the fan about August. And by September, the mills were closed. And I went to hundreds of families in my district and in Representative Moe's district and many other districts, Representative Solberg, Representative Anzell's district, and the people said, we're not going to be here in a year. We can't wait for May and then a, special session. I heard that at least 50 times, about how, we can't wait because our letters of credit are due. Our payments on our equipment are due. And if we go out of business, we aren't going to be able to reestablish. And so I thought, okay, well, the real answer would be have the legislature do this now. But now, in August and September, wasn't until January and February where we're at right now. So I'm trying to think, if we do give the Executive Council the authority to do this in the future, that should this come up in like the interim case as it did this time, we can react to it a little more readily. Well, that's some discussion and some debate. Also, there are some people in the logging community that have already forfeited their sales, and they've lost their 15% because provisions such as this aren't in law yet. One of the things I'd like to do between the time that we refer this out of this committee and the time we get it to Representative Wagenius's committee is to look at some of the options of possibly including some of those that might have been within this urgency period, but they already canceled their contract. So there's some fine-tuning that needs to be done. The cord, the 35,000 cord level, you'll notice down in the bottom provision of the first page, page 1 of 2, I asked DNR to come up with a list of the permit holders, particularly the largest permit holders, and the permit holders were in the range in cordage from about 200,000 cords down to very small number. Most of the mills are above the 35,000 cord, and most of the loggers are below the 35,000 cord. And so the object of the bill was to help the mills to the extent that we could, because they're part of the problem. They stood right at those auctions and they bid that price. And the loggers are part of the problem. They stood at those auctions and bid part of the price as well. So in trying to craft this bill, we tried to craft a bill that everybody carried a little bit of the load, that the state was going to lose if we re-auction the wood off in the future, and that price will be lower. The loggers will lose if they had so much wood that it would be above whatever threshold, the threshold now 35,000. And the mills would lose quite a bit because they couldn't refund, because many of the mills are at 80, 90, 100, 150, 175,000 cords, so only a small percentage of their wood would be subject to this at this present level. But the important thing to remember about the level that we've defined in this bill is that the level that the bill defined, and that the it says no more than 35,000 cords. So the way the bill has been crafted so that the Executive Council could determine, well, 35,000 cords is way too big of an impact on the state, and that's too much for us to carry. We can reduce that. They could reduce that level down to a smaller amount to reduce fiscal impact, and then thus spread the load onto the companies and the loggers, etc. So with that, that's a quick overview of the bill. Representative Rukavina was here, Mr. Chair. I don't know if he wanted to add anything on this. He was at many of the meetings that I was at, and I just asked if he wanted to come up and add something.
I think he's here. I think he's here.
He probably didn't want to add anything then, so very good.
I'll have a couple questions for you, Representative Deal, and then perhaps anybody else does. we obviously don't have a fiscal note on this bill yet. And other counties around in northern Minnesota have done something similar, and what they have done has been their county boards have chosen to do based on their resources, financial resources in the county. Maybe you could talk a little bit about potential implications for this bill once we get a fiscal note back.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, we don't have a fiscal note on this yet, and frankly, what we could only estimate is what the maximum impact could be, because we don't know what the Executive Council will actually pick for a threshold once that bill is before, and once they make their determination that in fact an urgency exists. But we can estimate what I believe we can estimate, and we'll have that available for Representative Wagenius's committee, those numbers of the maximum impact that it could have. But remember, members, if we hold on to the 15% for the next 3 to 5 years, and they don't cut the wood, we don't get the 85%. And then if we re-let the contracts when they expire at the end of 3 to 5 years, and they have another 3 to 5 years to cut them, we're looking at wood that's 10 years, it could be as far as 10 years out, and probably 3 to 10 years out. And I've got quite a bit of that wood that's laying on the ground right now from a big storm on July 4th, but...
Thank you, Representative. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. One quick question, then one more, but a little more complex. But the eligible timber permits, are most of those from folks within Minnesota, or are a lot of them without Minnesota?
Well, first off, under this bill, Representative Wagenius, all of the timber permits would be eligible for this, the bill is written. My sense is that the vast majority of timber permits are held by Minnesota families, Minnesota company, or Minnesota companies who have operations here in Minnesota. They may be based in Finland or otherwise, but they have operations here. Now, I'm not sure about one. One of the largest is a person that buys wood. Some people call them speculators. And they have one of the very highest number of cordages, up around 200,000, and I think, and I could find out, we could find out from Mr. Tomlinson, I think they're from Wisconsin, but I think looking down that list, especially in the higher ranks, we're talking Minnesota-based, Minnesota, and maybe Mr. Tomlinson could come up and comment on that.
Was that Virginia's?
Thank you. We can get that at another time, but that's just one question. Something that is, because this has been out and about, somebody else has posed this to me, but the way this is drafted, and I was wondering if there was a sunset date, and there's not, and I understand your reasoning for that, that this is only on the downside. So, you know, if there's a downside, people are caught. There's a safety net here. And I understand that for the loggers. But we have no way of directly paying for that. Has anybody talked to you about, you know, we're not capturing anything on the upside? 5 years ago, somebody got a contract, and it was a bonanza because they didn't pay very much for it, and the wood became very that valuable over the course of the 5 years. Has anybody talked to you about starting a fund of any kind for when we have those bonanza years to set aside some money for when we have the dismal years?
No, Representative Wagenius, Mr. Chair, no, they have not. That has not been anything that's been discussed, to my knowledge, within the industry or within the logging community or here in the House of Representatives.
Representative Wagenius, you know, from my own personal experience and knowledge, I can't, as long as I've been paying attention, I can't remember real bonanza years. I think it's been quite some time. I wish we were back there. Go ahead.
Well, I only bring that up. Somebody else had suggested it to me because there were some recent bonanza years. And we don't know how much this is going to cost, and we have a very limited budget. So are there ways to structure this so that if it's going to be a recurring problem, we provide for that? And that's my question. It's something to be thinking about, since obviously some other folks have been thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, in terms of a logger, I've never been around a logger yet. They're worse than farmers when it comes to making money. Every one of them's been broke, no matter how good it is. And the real bonanza has always been the real bonanza. A logger, when they're out working in the woods, they negotiate a contract with a company that they're a contractor for, on a delivered price with so much for production and delivery. And the real bonanza over this time of increased cost of timber has been to the counties and to the local units of government and to the state and to the school trust. But the crux of this bill is that the bonanza is over, and that the price has dropped down to such a level that all that bonanza wood that we thought we were riding the range on is not going to get cut, and we're not going to collect the money. And that's where the real problem is that at the state level, we need to get wood that's cut so we can keep revenues coming in. And the 85% that we'll sacrifice is far going to outweigh the 15% that we're giving up. But I do agree with you, in the short term, that's a financial problem for us. And it's just my thought on that. Okay, any other questions?
Any other questions? Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Chairman, and Representative Dill. I just got a whole series of questions, and I'm thinking...
I could expect that from a tree guy.
Yeah, well, thank you. And one that's fiscally conservative and concerned about the state. I would just hope, if we do move it out of here and we move it to Representative Wagenius' committee, if that's the will of this body, that there's a number of concerns that I'm hoping we can address in the coming week. Specifically, Representative Wagenius, the first one I had was, you know, what if the price had been in the other direction? I don't imagine Mr. Brandt would be here to say he wants to give money back to the state because these guys were making more money. And you know, I'm a big free enterprise person. And I also can understand some of these folks are going to go broke if we can help them. I am concerned of what the implications are for the school trust land. I think that close to 50% of this land is in school trust. So I'm hoping that with the DNR, we can look at that as it goes to Representative Wagenius. I think Representative Wagenius's point of a sunset is a very important one, that we need to do that. I personally would rather see us do like we did in the 80s, not long before I was here. I was cutting trees then. That we do what was done in the 80s and think about potentially legislatively doing it. I know the folks had a problem last summer, and I guess that's the way the legislature works. I'd rather us legislatively be making this decision. So I'm hoping as we move it to Representative Wagenius's committee, we can look at that. And then I also want to be sure that we end up in the end treating the folks the same, whether they posted a bond or posted cash. I don't want that we do something that ends up hurting the bondholders. That was something I remember in my first year. I believe that I was one that said we should be encouraging these people to post bonds because the cash can be a real strap on them. I want to make sure that some legislation that I proposed as a brand new freshman doesn't mess up a couple of small loggers that started using bonds instead of cash. I think that's pretty much everything. I just hope, Representative Dill, that we can work with Representative Simpson, who is up in that logging country, and Representative Moen, as we move towards Representative Wagenius's committee, some of these concerns. Because I do want to help the loggers, but I just think that there's some of these issues that we maybe need to address.
So, Mr. Chair, I mean, the purpose of the bill is to get help where help is due, just like the governor's task force recommendations do. And certainly between the time that Representative Wagenius, assuming she hears this bill, hears it, I'm willing to work, you know, trilaterally or however we work on this together to fine-tune it and get the end result what it's to be. And I do think we did provide, for in the case of bond indebtedness relief, I think we're providing the same, at least the way the bill is drafted, the same type of relief. Actually, we might... I'm not sure, but I think we may be providing more relief in the bonded indebtedness sales than we are in the 15%, because as I understand it, the bond indebtedness sales are fully covered with lines of credit for bonds for the value of the auction price, as I understand it.
Chairman, excuse me, just a real quick follow-up. And the other concern would be is I don't know if we should be letting them totally off the hook. I think a potential thing like happened in the mid-80s where they cost-shared some. Now, I know maybe this is circumstances, but I'd like to know how it compares with the 80s. I know the prices were different, but in the 80s, they did forfeit a small part of their down payment or their basis.
Representative Bill?
No.
Just for a point of information, Representative McNamara, Beltrami County has just passed a resolution, I guess it was last month, that returned a third of the cost for those loggers that wanted to turn back their sales, a third of the down payment. So different counties across state of Minnesota have done that differently so far, based on their resources.
And Mr. Chair, didn't Hubbard County do 100% refund on their
I think so.
On their deposit?
I see some nods, yeah. Hubbard County did 100%. So.
100%.
Representative Hackbarth and then Representative Cornish. Good.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dill, I think the people in the audience, Mr. Brandt and Mr. Thomason, I think everyone here knows that I'm very, very supportive of the loggers in this state, and we've done some things in the past that helped them out. I want to help them out too, Representative Dill, but I think this goes much further than what we're talking about in giving them relief and turning this over to the Executive Council for forever. And I think this is an issue that we have to talk about before this bill goes on. I know that you want to move it to Representative Wagenius' committee, and I guess that's okay, but when we get there, this is one of the issues that we're going to have to discuss there, apparently, because I know it's moving out of here and it's going to go to her committee, but this bill has some problems. And with me, giving this authority to the Executive Council is the largest problem in this bill. So let's do what we can for the loggers. I don't even care if we give all the money back. We haven't heard from the DNR on what they feel about this bill and the effect that it's going to have. But I don't care if we give all the money back. Give 100% back. But this is the wrong direction to go. And Representative Dill, I wish we could have had a bill that we all could have sung kumbaya on your very first bill out of the chute, your very first committee. You know I respect you and I feel the same way on many, many issues. But Representative Dill, this goes way beyond what I can support. Giving this authority to the Executive Council, I'm going to be voting no.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not on the Finance Committee, but I would hope that when it got there that you wouldn't try to re-gouge or make up the money later in the good times. We give the legislature has had a long history of giving money to people in hard times and not asking for it back in good times. I mean, welfare, somebody turns into a millionaire, we don't ask them for all the money they got back, or the ethanol payments. Once they start making money, not to, you know, give us part of their profit, or the disaster payments to different parts of the state. So I think we can help somebody out without trying to start a fund out of that same group of people that we help out to make up later. So.
Any other questions for the author? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify before or for or against, in particular, Mr. Dane? Anybody up there? No.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it'd be nice to hear from the department and see what they feel about this. The department can come down and comment.
Sure. Mr. Epperly and Mr. Tomlinson? Mr. Meyer? I guess that's your role here.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. We just received a copy of the bill late last week, and we started reviewing it over the weekend and had some meetings going through it. As you're aware here, it does have a lot of complex issues as to the fiscal impacts, long-term impacts, and we're in the process of evaluating those right now. We do recognize the need for relief, for some kind of relief. We've been involved with the Governor's Task Force, as you know, and trying to figure out the best way to do that is what we're interested in. On this position, on the bill in particular, we're interested in working through the details as it progresses, and that's where we stand right now, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I was listening to the testimony earlier about the Governor's Council and the recommendations, I had assumed that we would see some money in your budget for this. I think I've made the wrong assumption. Have I made the wrong assumption?
Mr. Chair, Representative Arginius, our budget recommendations that came out today and the task force recommendations line up almost exactly except for this one piece. Because of the issue of how to do the relief, that was kind of across the board, different ideas that were out there. We weren't able to put a line item budget piece together for that. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but the short answer is no, there's not money for contract relief there. But we recognize the need to try to work something out.
Mr. Everly, anything to add?
No, sir. Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Chairman, I want to call you Chairman again. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Oh, Mr. Dean. Come on down.
Well, Mr. Chair, if there are no... We've
got one more here.
Oh, Mr. Dean. Thank you.
A lot of the issues have been covered, and as far as the logging industry is concerned, we are very supportive of addressing relief for the bonded and unbonded sales. It's critical. It's going to impose undue financial hardship and make things worse in Minnesota if there's not a way to return these sales to the state of Minnesota and get them back out there and re-auction and get that timber at a market value that the mills can afford to buy and then produce their products. I have one, maybe I didn't understand quite clearly, but from our checking earlier on with regards to revenue, and I know that's not really what this committee is about, but the down payments, the 15% down payment, from the reports I got back, the way I understood it was, they're held in escrow and gaining interest, actually. And then the bonds are actually just held in a file. The DNR, if I'm not mistaken, I had to go in through each individual file to determine how many bonds are in the city out there. So I don't know how that factors into the direct budget at this time. Perhaps as it gets to the Finance Committee, we could get better understanding of that. But I would like to encourage the committee to seriously consider approving and passing this bill forward. It's a message that's necessary to get out to the industry that this is progressing, and we do recognize that more work needs to be done to refine this, and we're prepared to assist in any way we can. Thank you.
Senator Heckler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And your name again, sir, was?
Scott Dane.
I'm sorry?
Scott Dane.
Mr. Dane. How do you feel about the Executive Council part of this bill, or are you aware of that part of it, or is that an issue for you, or do you understand that part of it?
Actually, we do. And when this whole crisis hit with the shutdown of Ainsworth, a couple days later, we were down at the governor's office with a contingent of loggers and other timber industry stakeholders. And the governor actually looked at that and thought, this might be the quickest mechanism to do that. And then he checked with Attorney General Mike Katz at the time, who informed him that the Executive Council did not have this specific authority at that time. So based on that need to provide that and that mechanism to expedite the relief, we do, you know, appreciate and support that.
Thank you.
It's getting pretty late. I'm going to... Representative Simpson had a quick question, if that's okay?
Just kind of a comment, and going off of what Representative Hackbarth is saying, you know, the legislature has had the authority to overview these in past, and I understand the timing situation, but as we move forward on this, I think I'd be a little concerned about this, so I would hope somebody would look at this a little closer as it moves to the next committee.
Okay. Got any further comments or questions? Representative Dill renews his motion.
Renew the motion.
Pass House File 299 and send it to Environment, Natural Resource, Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. And bill is passed. And let's Does she have anything else to say, Mr. Chairman?
No.
Monday at 4 o'clock, right here, next committee. Meeting adjourned.